Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. Before we get into this week's episode, I want to mention our supporting partners who help to keep this podcast going. First up is thanks to Komoot. Komoot is a route planning and navigation app, and the most important thing about it is that it's actually designed to work for mountain biking. You can plan routes on your phone or your computer. All you need to do is give it a start and an endpoint, and it'll plan the best route for you. You'll get a detailed breakdown of your route, which includes gradient, surface type, and difficulty. Komoot has got offline navigation, so it works even if you're out of phone signal, and the turn-by-turn voice navigation means you can focus on enjoying your riding and let Komoot take care of the rest. I've been using it recently for my training rides, and it's been super useful, allowing me to find some new routes in areas that I don't know very well and focus on burying myself instead of working out where I'm going. The Komoot app is free to download, and as a Downtime listener, Komoot are offering you a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. That means you'll be able to take the maps offline and connect your Komoot with your Garmin or your Wahoo device so you can follow the routes on there. All you need to do is to head to komoot.com/G. That's Komoot spelled KOMOOT.com/G and use the code Downtime. Downtime, all one word, all uppercase. That offer is valid until the end of August 2019, so head over to komoot.com and give it a try for free. Next up, it's We Are One Composites. They're a small Canadian brand making top quality carbon wheels and bars right there in Kamloops in Canada. You can find out all about them by listening to our previous episodes with their founder Dustin Adams. I've been on a set of their Agent 29er wheels for 12 months now and I love them. They track so well, helping me ride confidently and accurately, but without being so stiff that they ping off everything on the trail. They've got a whole new range of wheels available right now, and as a Downtime listener, you can get 15% off any stock Movement or Revolution Series wheels or their new depackaged bar and stem for the month of July. This is only for stock products, so no custom tweaks. All you need to do is head to wearonecomposites.com and use the code Downtime15 at the checkout. That's Downtime with a capital D and the number 15. I also massively appreciate the support that I get from all of you lot. Please keep on helping out by telling your riding friends about the podcast and let them know what they're missing out on if they're not listening. If you want to support us, help spread the word and show you're part of a growing group of riders who are listening, learning and getting faster as a result, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop and check out our t-shirts, hoodies and mugs. Thanks to everyone who's already got something. It really does help keep the podcast going. As always, don't forget to head to downtimepodcast.com and subscribe to the podcast. Join our newsletter so you can keep up to date with everything podcast related and give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Also, if you've got a minute, then please leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the podcast. Okay, this week I'm joined by one of the most promising up-and-coming riders of the generation, Vali Hull. Since Vali hit the World Cup scene, she's taken the junior women's category by storm, and until Fort William this year, she'd never finished any lower than first. We sat down at the Leger World Cup to chat about how she got into riding, beating the boys at her first races, getting sponsored, injury, and much, much more. So, without further ado, here's Vali Hull. Vali Hull, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's
Thank
it going?
You. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. Thanks. Tell us where we are.
We're in Léger, France, for the fifth round of the UCI Downhill World Cup. Right now, in our SRAM pit, inside the track where it's cool and
some good air conditioning.
Yeah,
very chilled. Yeah,
American style.
You've just finished qualifying.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Is there like a little routine post qualifying? What do? You cool down, or do you just come down and get some food? How does it work?
Well, it depends how the track was. Like in Andorra, it took me a few. An hour maybe to calm down because I was so done. But here it's only 3 minutes track and you just get back to the pit and eat something.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Good stuff. Let's get stuck into it. Before we start talking about bikes, am I right in thinking that skiing was kind of your first thing as you were growing up?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I grew up I still live in a ski area in Salwa.
Yeah.
And it's the thing you do when you grow up there. You go skiing and you start ski racing.
Yeah. And so were you quite competitive in skiing?
Oh, yes. Ooh, yeah. My parents could tell you a lot of stories because I hated to lose. Yeah.
So that's where your competitive drive started.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And how did you get into mountain biking?
Well, my parents always were riding bikes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I was cross country and longer marathons and kind of boring stuff. But then in 2005, I think, they flew to Canada, to Whistler.
Cool.
And then there, the world of downhill mountain biking opened them. And yeah, it was cool because when they came back, my dad started directly building a track down our house.
Nice.
And that's kind of where I grew up.
Oh, right. So literally, as soon as you were on a bike, you were exposed to kind of downhill tracks. Yeah. And so what age were you when you'd say you first sort of rode a mountain bike downhill?
I rode my first race when I was 3 years old. Wow. I got last because I always stopped when somebody took a photo of me. So funny. So I don't do that anymore. So
you've worked that one out.
Yeah. But yeah. And then it was when I was 8, I started to do like dual races and small races. Yeah.
And then, so was that all local?
Yeah, local races. Yeah. And then in 2013, when I was 11, my dad discovered the IXS Rookies Cup. And it was kind of weird that time because I had to race against the boys. There were no girls' class.
Okay.
So, and he knew how competitive I was. So he was like, when we drove there for 8 hours to Germany, he was like, okay, Vali, you're going to race against boys. You're not going to win. So, you know, there's no chance you're going to be pissed off because I told you, you're not going to win. And the funny thing was, at the end of the day, I beat all the boys and got first. Awesome. And there was the point where he was like, yeah, maybe you're quite good in riding downhill. And that's where it started.
Cool. What was the boys' reaction like?
Oh, I had no friends. You know, when they're all like 13, 12 years old, girls are so weird and yeah, they don't like. I mean, I think they still don't like who beat them. But at that age, it's not really good when you beat the boys, but now it gets better.
Yeah, way definitely. Better. That's cool. So what do you remember from that first race? How did you feel?
Well, it was my first downhill race, and it was like qualifying on the same day as the race. So it was only a one-day race, and I was just cruising. Oh, yeah, I don't really like remember how it was. I think it was just normal to me to ride down a bike park track. You know?
And did you find that win fairly easy?
Well, I didn't expect at all because I didn't know the people.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what a downhill race really is. And then,
cool.
Worked out.
Nice. So what was it that you kind of enjoyed from that? Was it more about the riding and the taking part, or did you really get a buzz from winning it?
Yeah, of course, winning. And then all the people you get to know. Because also at that race, I get to know YT Industries.
Okay.
And that's kind of where it started with them then.
Right, so they spotted you pretty early on then.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how did the sort of sponsors come into things? Yeah. So how did they approach you after that race? What happened?
Yeah, exactly. And then they called my parents like, if I want to go and visit them to Germany, then we drove there with no expectations really. And then we get into the meeting room and they were like, okay, we give you a 6 years contract.
How old were you at this point?
13.
Wow.
Yeah.
You must have been blown away.
Oh, it was crazy.
Yeah. How did you deal with that? Because that's pretty young to be sat in a meeting, full stop.
Yeah,
so.
No, it was crazy. It was the first time. My parents as well. I mean, you go there and then suddenly your kid gets a contract. Like, what the fuck is going on?
That's insane. And am I right in thinking your godmother gave you some kind of advice around the sponsorship
Angie.
Side of things?
Yeah, Angie was always my idol. And I always looked up to her. And her riding is so smooth and perfect. And I was always riding behind her and I think that's where I got the nice technique and also with sponsors and, you know, how you promote yourself and social media and stuff.
Yeah.
Everything I learned was from her.
Cool. What sort of tips did she give you on the promotional side of things? So I think a lot of people struggle with that side.
Yeah. No, first of all, there's the Eurobike after every season in September, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it was that year in 2013, I think so, where I made a little like coverage map and went alone to all big brands and asked them if they're going to help me out for next season. Alone, totally alone, without parents. And I think that's also where the brands were impressed that the little girl, 12 years old, 11 years old, goes there and asks them if they can help out with.
Yeah. So what did you take to show the brands? Was it just you and you went and had a chat, or did you take some information? How did you approach it?
Yeah, I made like the little coverage map on the word and put some pictures and race results and add a little video from down too and just ask them.
Sweet. And were most brands pretty open to having a chat and getting involved?
But if I think back now I'm like 17, I was like, oh my god, I would never do it. I would be so scared to talk to people. I don't know why I did
really
it then.
Yeah, what made you so brave then?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I didn't realize that. And am I right in thinking before you even raced the World Cup, Red Bull had been in touch?
Yeah.
How did that happen? Did they just spot you on the scene?
Yeah, they spotted me, and the MS Mondraker team is really close to Red Bull because of their team owner. And then I think when I was 14, maybe, they had like a little rookies camp in Leogang.
Okay.
Where a lot of German-speaking riders were invited to. And I think I really did well there. And then kind of went on from there. I did my little Red Bull blog when I was racing the European Cup. And then, when I turned 16, I got the helmet.
And am I right in thinking they surprise people with the helmets? You don't know it's coming necessarily, and then you get...
You have to sign a contract before.
Uh-huh, right.
But you don't know when you get the helmet.
Yeah.
And then, they invited me together with Laura Sticker. She's a ICSI racer,
okay,
also from Austria. And then they have the Hangar 7 in Salzburg, where they have all those crazy planes and helicopters.
Yeah.
And then somebody suddenly, walked out of a helicopter and had my helmet in his hand. It was like crazy moment.
Wicked. Yeah. What's it like having the Red Bull support? Because they're pretty good with their athletes, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, the doors, they open for you, and the events you can take part, and all the support, medical support, and they're just awesome. Really,
very nice. So talk us a bit through your first World Cup, because they're huge events. I'm not sure there's anything that can really prepare you for your first World Cup. What was it like when you turned up?
Well, first World Cup was in Lushin in Croatia, which was a new track to everyone else. And I remember doing track walk, and then Tanny Seagrave came to me. Oh, nice to meet you. So cool you're racing now with us. And I was like, oh my God, my biggest hero talks to me. And then there's like Bulldog and Lloyd Bruni, and everyone is like right next to you. And I'm still like a super fan. Still like second year junior, and I'm still like, when Rachel talks to me, I'm like, oh my God, she's so cool. Yeah, I think that will never change.
Yeah, no, it's super cool to have all your idols around. Were they all really receptive then? They were all glad to see you and all made you feel welcome?
Yeah, I think after my third race, when I showed my potential, they kind of accepted me and they were part of the fam.
Yeah. What were your expectations then going to a World Cup? Because you'd won a lot of races already up to that point. What were you hoping to achieve when you started the World Cup?
Well, I knew the girls who I was racing with, and I never say, oh, I'm going to win this race now. Uh-huh. I'm always like, a podium would be cool. If not, top five. I don't want to put myself those expectations, because...
It's pressure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's better... For me, it's better mentally if I put my expectations low and I can, top them. That's how I prepare.
Yeah. And you won it.
Yeah, I won it. All seven races last year. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Has anyone done that in juniors? Like, had a clean sweep?
Oh, I have no idea. Maybe Anka Roh.
Okay.
Because I think she already won elite races when she was racing.
Right. Yeah. Fair play. So, yeah. Like, how do you even process that? I mean, it must be very... It could be easy to get complacent, I guess, because you were winning and you're putting quite big margins into the rest of the field.
Yeah.
Is it hard to kind of keep yourself grounded and keep following the process and working hard?
Yeah, it was crazy, because after every race, I was like... The next race, I was like the same. Oh yeah, podium would be cool. So I was never like on the way up.
Uh-huh.
So I always stayed, tried to be grounded. And also my parents were like, chill down and just be like you are.
Keeping your feet on the ground kind of thing. And what sort of training were you doing at that point, kind of entering World Cups? Were you doing a lot of gym stuff or...
I still go to school, which takes a lot of time. And in winter, we have so much snow. So I think our bike park's open in end of May. So that's actually too late.
Right.
So it's kind of hard for me to get some bike time. That's what I'm like missing out. I mean, I do all the gym work as well.
Yeah.
Like try to do it three times a week and do some endurance training. But... Actually, it sucks when it's winter and it's, you go out for school when it's dark, you come home after the gym when it's dark. It's like hard time in winter. Yeah. And you only have 2 weeks of Christmas holidays and 1 week where the semester change. It's only 3 weeks before you go to the first race.
Yeah.
It's like not enough, really.
That's insane. Yeah. How do you get bike ready then for the start of the season? Do you do any kind of training camp somewhere warmer or?
That's funny, because we did a training camp, or like suspension camp this year, which was in Windrock, Tennessee in March. And it was minus 6 degrees in the morning. I was so unmotivated to ride my bike then. Was terrible. I mean, it was cool with all the surround people and testing stuff, but I was just freezing. And now I'm like, okay, next year I'm going elite. I'm just going where it's nice and warm. I learned from it 2 years ago, so next year I'm going to change it.
Gonna have a warm winter somewhere.
Yeah, warm winter.
So yeah, how, I guess a lot of people want to know how you fit schooling around your training. Do you have to be super organized?
Oh yeah, I'm really an organized person. Maybe sometimes a little bit too much because I'm writing lists what I have to do. And because it's, you know, I'm just trying. Even like this year, I was like so unmotivated in school. I was just there. Get it done.
Yeah.
Like positive is positive.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was just, yeah, I was so happy when this year was over because I was, if you have racing, it's like so cool when you hang around people and then you drive home on Sunday after the race and go Monday to school and it just hits you in the face. Like, straight, boom. Yeah.
And is school still compulsory for you, or is that a choice now?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I have one more year.
Okay.
And then I'm done forever.
Okay. And what will you do after that? Because I've read in other interviews you've talked about going to uni and studying. Is it sports marketing?
Yeah, right.
Is that still on the plan, or is racing kind of starting to take more of a...
Yeah, for sure. But I was talking to my parents. They were like, my dad was like, you should take a year off. Just, you know, just try it 1 year.
Yeah.
But I think like after the 1 year, I need to do something else. Because if you think about biking all the time, the whole year long, I think it's not good for you. So maybe I will try to find a university where I can study like from September to March maybe.
Okay.
So yeah, that you just think about something else and don't do the same thing every day. Because I think that gets really tiring.
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
Yeah, exactly. You need a break from it. Yeah? You need some space. Yeah, cool. So what do you think it is about your upbringing or your experience that enabled you to be so competitive from the start of your career? Because we don't see many people that come in and just win. It's pretty unusual. Is there anything you can kind of put your finger on that you think, these few things helped me along the way? Obviously, you mentioned your godmother, but...
Yeah. No, I think like the people I was growing up with and having Angie, a former World Cup racer, and just, yeah... Actually, all my friends and in school, like, everyone is so competitive and my family supports me so much. And, yeah, I don't know why this happens to me, but it seems to work out, yeah.
Yeah. So if you've got a good crew of riding friends at home then, it's quite quick to ride with.
Yeah, I have only boys
because
there are no girls in Austria. Like, I'm the only Austrian girl who's racing World Cups. It's kind of weird.
That is
weird. The first Austrian who won a World Cup.
Yeah.
Ever. That's... Yeah.
It's insane.
I don't know why the riding scene is so small.
Yeah, because you've got the mountains.
Yeah, we got Schladming, we have Leogang. And
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it comes now when, maybe I can, motivate some girls or boys even.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be cool to see more people coming from that area, for sure. Yeah. So this season, there was rumours kicking around in the off-season that you might go up into elite a year early. Was that an option for you? Was it a choice that you had to make?
No, I mean, we were talking about it after La Bresse, before Worlds, and I was like, no chance. I'm not going to do it. Like, why? Because even I'm still not that fast like the elites. And then I would rather like to win junior races than being top 10 in elites. But, maybe you get the TV time. That would be cool.
Yeah.
So my mom can see me racing when she's not here. But, yeah, there's no stress. Still have so many years.
So. Yeah, you're still very young. Yeah. So yeah, plenty of time for that. So, but clearly you will compare your times against the elites. Is that are you more interested in winning the juniors, or are you more interested in where you finish in the elites?
Given I don't that you're compare up? My times.
Really?
Yeah, I hate it. I get so when people come, oh yeah, you're only 2 seconds. I'm like, bah, stop. Hold on, I don't want to even know it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I also stopped reading comments on Pink Bike because that just freaks me out. I hate it. Because you can never compare the time. Sometimes my track is way better than them than theirs, or their track is better because it dried up.
Yeah.
Or you can never. Maybe qualifying day. But at least then there were like 80 riders after me, and then they have the girls. So. Yeah, you can't compare. And I don't like when people do it.
Okay, oh, that is interesting.
Just stress me.
Yeah. Yeah, so next year is going to be super interesting for you then. So it's the first time you'll really be able to test yourself against those girls, and hopefully everyone will be back from injury and fight fit. Should be an interesting season.
Yeah, next year is going to be fun, but I'm also going to miss 2 World Cups next year because of my A exams.
Yeah.
So I think that's also, for me, better because I don't put too much pressure on myself because I still... The main thing is school next year and get my levels done. And with missing out 2 races, I think it kind of puts the pressure away for me and people maybe not think about me, and then I come back and then I hope I can do really well.
Yeah, that's actually, it's pretty good timing, isn't it, really? Good stuff. So 2019 season started off well, Maribor, and then Fort William, first World Cup that you've not won.
Yeah, and still got second.
Yeah, you seem pretty cool about it though. How did you feel?
Yeah, for sure I was pissed off because... You know, the winning streak was pretty insane.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how it worked out like that. But I was kind of relieved that it finally happened.
Okay.
It may sound weird, but I was kind of, I don't know. I also was happy that other girls win.
Yeah.
Because Anna, you know, she's so fast and always so close here. But it's like, there's just something missing. And... No, everybody is doing mistakes, and finally I did mine, and she could earn the win, which is so cool, and I'm so happy for her.
That's cool, yeah. Where did you crash on that? I remember seeing you finish with mud on your legs, but I didn't know where you crashed.
Yeah, it was before the Red Bull drop.
Okay.
The road gap.
In that steep, muddy wood section.
And then afterwards, I also crashed again, so I just unclipped into the corners before the river gap.
Yeah.
So maybe if I didn't have the third one, but... You know, I don't care. It just happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's racing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone crashes at some point. And then, unfortunately, you went off to Crankworx to have some fun there. And I think that's an event that you said before you were excited about doing.
Yeah.
But you had an accident in, was it?
Slalom. Yeah.
Yeah, practice.
I was so hyped from Leo again because I did so well.
Yeah.
I went with a big margin, and I could show them that I'm, you know, that I'm here and I'm fast after Fort William. Which was cool, and then I think I was just overexcited and was so quick, and for me, I felt really quick in dual slalom, really enjoyed it, and then I was doing the training with Lee Donovan, and I was a little bit in front and just wanted to show her how fast I am, and then I missed the corner and just crashed on my shoulder really bad.
Oh, yeah. So was it like some kind of separation, or
what happened? I tore on the capsule,
and
the AC joint was, I don't know the exact words in English, but...
Yeah, no, that's a fairly serious injury.
Yeah.
So is that your first kind of big injury in competition since you've been doing World Cup?
When I was 11 or 12, I torn my kidney.
Okay.
Yeah, because I didn't wear back protection, so kids wear protection.
Okay, noted, yeah.
Yeah, but then I was kind of happy, so knock on wood.
Knock wood, yeah. So how was it coming back? What kind of rehab did you have to do to get back from that? Because you was it 3 weeks between that and
the next race? The doctor said it takes 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And pain will be there longer, and Andorra was 2.5 weeks later.
Wow.
So I went back on Wednesday morning, went to my physio, and I also went to school because I had no holiday, so I went to school in those 2.5 weeks. And in the afternoon, I went to see my physio and went to training, did something for the legs, and just to stay fit, and some water gymnastic and and painkillers.
Wow. So how did it feel at Andorra? It must have been hard work because that track, 5 minutes, super
terrible.
Physical.
Yeah. Definitely not the best preparation you can have.
Yeah, no
bike
time.
For Andorra, yeah. But I was riding the first time on Sunday before I left.
Yeah.
To Andorra.
Wow.
And I was like, it was weird because the one position I needed for the bike was fine. Just the other positions were hurting so bad. So I was like super happy that it worked out. And then, first training day was good. I was a little bit tired on the second and quali day. And then I had a massive crash on race day just before my final run. Because I always do one run because there's not enough time to do a second one. And I just... Totally ran into a tree with my bad shoulder and went over the bars. And was not ideal. So I was like, so gutted. Because I was so in pain. I never felt it before.
Yeah.
And I was like, not sure if I should race. And then I texted my mom and so I don't know what I should do. And she's like, you don't have to do something. You can stay there. You don't have to race. I was like, well, I'm here. So let's just try. Yeah. And my plan was to cruise down, but the cruising down was really fast. I don't know. I think if people say, yeah, we just roll down, as soon as you're in the start gate, a racer's mind just switch.
Yeah.
And then you do what you ever do and you forget the pain.
Yeah. Cool. And how's it feeling this week? Because the track here is, it's a bit shorter. It's not quite as rough, but still physical.
Yeah. I took a break from Sunday to, Wednesday.
Okay.
To recover a little bit. And yeah, this track is actually crazy. It's so fast. And now it's really bumpy and weird flat jumps where a lot of girls crash out, unfortunately. And
yes.
Yeah. It's really tough for your arms and shoulders, but
yeah. And what do you think it will take to win on this track? What are the key things to get right?
I think who has the biggest balls, to be honest. Because, there's like one ski jump and it's just, I don't know how long, you just ride down the ski piste.
This is the one just above the road.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge, isn't
it? It's like, when do I start braking? Or do I even brake? Or when should I start turning? Because it's so wide open. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Well.
So you just got to hold it wide and stay on tomorrow then.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So how do you feel about next season then, moving up? Is it something you're nervous about, or does the school, is the school thing kind of taking the pressure off you?
No, for sure. I'm like more, I'm for sure more looking forward to my school thing, to get it done finally.
Cause, yeah.
Oh, I hate school. Sorry. Oh, no, I'm so happy when it's finally over and I can do what I love. But it's important, so.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think do you see yourself having a career in cycling that goes beyond racing, or do you think you'll move out and do something different?
I don't know yet, but that's why I'm like interested in like social media or marketing, because I think I'm already learning a lot, even with SRAM. Like Mr. Dawson is helping me a lot with dealing with sponsors, and I'm really interested in doing this and talking to people and kind of thinking about how to plan stuff. So
cool. What have you learned with the kind of the social media side of things? Because Instagram it's quite hard work to grow a following there.
Well, that's funny, because most of the people say it's quite hard work, but to be honest, I'm addicted to my phone anyway. So if I post something or it's not really work for me, because I'm anyways on my phone. So.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, the younger generation seems to be pretty attached to them, definitely. Cool. So what is there anything that you're particularly fussy about in your race week? Like anything around setup or your process that you follow or what you're eating? Anything you're really specific about?
Yeah, I mean, I have my own mechanic, Matt, and he's helping me a lot, even on the mental side. I'm like really, I'm just really quiet. And he's kind of helping me to have more fun during the race week. Because I'm just really into it, into racing and trying to be concentrated the whole week. But you don't have to be. You only have to be concentrated in training and on race day and qualifying.
Yeah. Well. Do you think it helps then to have a bit more fun around that stuff? Does it help you relax?
For sure.
Yeah.
But as soon as the race is done, and I'm looking forward to the after party. I'm a totally different person. I don't know why. But I think maybe I will change it or not, but it seems like to work out for me pretty well.
How big a part of your success so far has Matt been then? Because you work pretty closely together, don't
you? Yeah, oh, a big one. Like, my dad was my mechanic, and, you know, we had no idea what about bike setting or tires. Or I was just riding what I had on my bike, and it worked out as well. But, I mean, it can be better.
Yeah. And is there anything on your bike that you're fussy about? I know a lot of riders get kind of caught up on various setup things. But
no, we actually have figured out a really good main setup, and we just change the sag and the shock. That's all we do.
That's the only thing you change? Yeah. Wow.
And we shorten my grips because they're too long. Yeah, okay. That's the only two things
that's
really.
That's the first time I've ever heard anyone say that.
Yeah.
So you're actually physically cutting the grip shorter? Why? Just because you want to get the brakes closer?
No, because it looks shitty on photos. Because there's always like the end cap. Like, I don't know, maybe one and a half, 2 centimeters.
Yeah.
where I'm like too much inside.
Yeah.
And now I'm like perfectly on, and I feel better because my elbows are out.
So. Okay. And it looks better in the pictures. Yeah, it looks that's way the important better. Thing,
that's,
right?
Yeah, that's what we do.
Cool. So what advice would you give to young boys or girls looking to get into the sport and looking to kind of emulate your success? Any tips?
Yeah, for sure. Girls, like, I can imagine, like, the first years where you have to race against the boys in the same category. That's why they can be scared and say, oh, I don't want to race. I don't want that a boy like overtakes me or talks shit to me.
Yeah.
Because girls can be boys in that age, and that's cool.
Definitely.
So they shouldn't be scared and just try and have fun.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Good advice. We'll start wrapping up. We've got three questions that we've asked everyone, and we've just added a fourth because we were 100 episodes old now. So we added an extra question. The first one of those, if our listeners had 165 euros, which is about £150, to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they go and spend that money on?
That's a hard one. On the bike or?
On anything to kind of help them get a bit quicker or to have more fun.
That's really a hard one. I'm really like with my shoes.
Okay.
I'm really into my shoes.
Yeah.
Like, I tried so many shoes already and I only can ride that kind of model.
So what shoe do you use?
I used the 510 Pro Hellcat.
Uh-huh.
But then I tried the other ones as well.
Yeah.
I was riding the Enduro one, but that one was a little bit too hard for the age.
Yeah.
And then I moved back to the shoe I raced when I started racing, the Hellcat, the normal one.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it you like about that then? What are you feeling that's different in it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it's the looking, because yeah. I'm a girl, so I don't know.
Looks good in photos, yeah?
Yeah.
That's the one. All right, the second question is, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self if you could wind the clock back and have a chat with her? But you're only 17, you're the youngest person
last
we've ever
year.
Had on. Yeah.
Hmm.
What would you do differently?
I would say drink less at last year's World Champs party because I felt so sick.
did it get a bit wild?
Oh, yeah. It was so fun. But, yeah.
Excellent. Leje should be good for an after party, I would have thought. And Saturday race, so.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And have you got to go back to school on Monday?
No, now I have some holidays.
Ah, it's holidays.
Yeah, and I'm flying to Lisbon for some surfing.
Oh, nice.
So,
cool.
Just I try to be not sick in the plane.
Yeah. Early flight?
12 o'clock.
Not too bad.
It's all right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Third question. If you could have a coaching session with anyone, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
Oh, Cécile Ravanel.
Okay.
Oh, she's a badass on the bike. She's like, she's not scared at all. Like, if she would be here racing, oh my God, I think easy. Like, easy podium.
Yeah, she had a couple of goes, didn't she? Before she got injured, she did a couple of downhill races last season. And
yeah, and she always was
podiumed,
podium.
I think. Yeah. Impressive skills. But
she's
so
cool.
She always looks wild.
Yeah, she's wild, but it works out. I don't know how, but it works out for her.
Yeah, she seems to be able to hold on to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. And then the question that we've added in is, what do you do every day that you think is beneficial to you?
I'm not sure if it's beneficial. That's a hard one. Well, maybe a professional rider would say I stretch every day.
Okay.
But I only stretch on race day because I think it's a last minute stretch. So maybe I can, you know,
add that in.
Add that from the last missing 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
I should definitely stretch every day and I don't.
Yeah, maybe stretching. That's the thing.
Yeah, it is supposed
but
to be very
But I don't
good.
Do it.
Have you got any rituals? Anything you do, like you do journal or anything like that?
Not really.
No.
I have like a ritual with Matt before the race. We have a really special handshake.
Okay.
And we do it every single race. And before Matt, I did it with my dad.
Cool.
So it's kind of going back 5 years now.
Yeah.
And I also have a sticker from Angie, my godmother.
Cool.
Because she made me one at my first race in Winterberg.
Yeah.
At the Access Downhill Cup. And since that, I always wear like on the right side of my visor.
Yeah.
I always have a sticker of her.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I like it. Nice. So that just helps you get in the zone and
it's
feel
kind
like
of
you're
my
ready to race.
Charm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Trying.
Good
yeah.
stuff. Well, if people want to find out a bit more about you and keep up with what you're doing throughout the season, where's the best place for them to find you? Is it Instagram?
For sure, Instagram. Yeah.
And what's your Instagram name?
Valihul.
Okay.
OE.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes on the website so people
cool.
can find it. All right, well, we'll let you get on with the rest of your weekend. Best of luck for racing tomorrow, and see you at the after party.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Good
looking
stuff.
Forward to it.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. All right, that's it for my chat with Valley Hall. I hope you all enjoyed listening. Thanks to Camus and We Are One Composites for supporting the podcast and helping me keep going. Don't forget, they've both got great listener discount offers for you. Head to camus.com/G and use the code DOWNTIME, all in uppercase, to get a free regional map bundle of your choice worth $8.99. And just as a reminder, Camus is spelt K-O-M-O-O-T. You can head to weareonecomposites.com and use the code DOWNTIME15 at the checkout for 15% off all stock Movement and Revolution Series wheels and their new de-package bar and stem. That's DOWNTIME with a capital D, no space, then the number 15 over at weareonecomposites.com. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, get out and ride.